I'm now joined by Ben Phillips, Chief Investment Officer at EventShares. He's behind a really unique ETF. It's called the EventShares U.S. Legislative Opportunities ETF. The ticker symbol is PLCY. And the idea here is to take advantage of major shifts in government policy, which I think is a fascinating area, just given that it's an election year, right? When you think about how much could be in flux. Ben is on the line with me from Newport Beach, California. Ben, great reconnecting. A pleasure having you on the show this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Nate.
So, Ben, let's first talk about the ETF itself, and then I definitely want to get into some of the policy issues on your radar right now. So what is the investment process for the ETF? Because this is actively managed.
Yeah, that's right. It's an active process. I mean, really what we're looking at is starting from that top-down approach of identifying policies that are going to be impactful on a subsector, a sub-industry group, or a group of companies. And that's really the starting point is understanding, getting the policy right. We're actively tracking 25 to 30 different policies. And then our process puts them through a scoring process where we're really looking at progress. You know, if there's actually, you know, a talking point or a bill introduced or a bill passed or a rule, we're looking at the ability or the authority. Does the sponsor have the support and the power to push this bill through, or does the agency have the authority to act on this rule? And then we look at implementation. So near-term enactment is ranked higher. So that's how we score the policy process. Then once we've ranked the policies, that actually drives our weighting of the different policy themes in the portfolio. And then we start looking for individual companies that are exposed to that policy theme based on revenue exposure, really.
And how many holdings might be in the portfolio at any one time?
So it's typically around 100 plus or minus 20. So what we know we have to get right is the policy theme. There's a lot of idiosyncratic risk in a lot of the single name stocks we own because they're typically small and mid-cap stocks. So we know if we get the policy right and then we get the group of stocks with the most exposure to that policy, at the end of the day, if four of the five are doing what we expect, we're going to win.
And then perhaps we'll touch on this as we talk about some of the themes you're tracking, but how often are changes made in the portfolio?
So we stick to a pretty rigid quarterly rebalance schedule. So, just, you know, it's pretty commonplace in the ETF industry. Now, we're active, so there are times when we'll trade intra-quarter if there is a change. So if, you know, a policy plays out, or if we've seen a single name, you know, really, really run or maybe be under pressure, and we still believe in the policy theme, we'll actually add to it. So we are active still in nature, but you'll see that the major trades are usually on a quarterly rebalance schedule.
Okay, so with all that as a backdrop, let's talk about some of the key policy themes you're tracking right now. And by the way, I have to mention, when I looked at the fact sheet for this ETF, I found it really interesting because typically with a stock ETF, you'll see the composition broken down by traditional sectors, right? But with your ETF, you have it broken down by policy themes. I just love that. I thought it was really unique and definitely highlights the purpose behind this ETF. But walk us through a few of the biggest policy issues reflected in PLCY right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could run through a few that, like, I think people would expect to see in this, right? Like 5G telecoms being supported by the FCC. We have infrastructure, which is state spending. Defense, you know, we have a Republican Senate, we have a Republican White House, and really have been seeing increase in defense spending as well. You know, healthcare obviously belongs in there, some renewables. But I think some of the more off-the-run ones that drive a large portion of the portfolio are like IMO 2020. That's the low-sulfur fuel rigs for maritime shipping. We have sports betting in there. Uranium. And then infrastructure, like I mentioned, it's a state story. Everyone's looking at the federal, which we think is wrong. You know, that could potentially extend the infrastructure thesis. But right now, states are increasing spending because they can't wait around any longer for the Fed.
On the IMO 2020, can you explain that a little bit more? I'm guessing a lot of listeners probably aren't familiar with that.
Sure. So IMO is the International Maritime Organization. It's an organization underneath the UN. So this is the United Nations countries who have bound together to form effectively laws that govern the seas. And the last place on Earth where you can burn dirty fuel, high sulfur diesel, is over the oceans. And it's polluting. It's, you know, I think it's like 5% of the fuel consumption and a third of the global pollution as far as sulfur. So it's dirty stuff. So the sulfur content dropped from 3.5% to 0.5% on January 1st this year. So just 2 weeks ago. And it's a major change to the industry. It's disruptive to a lot of U.S. companies, a lot of the tanker companies, a lot of shipping companies, even some refiners are impacted by it. So we really own a basket of companies that are expected to benefit from this change. There are a number of companies that are not going to benefit. They're going to have to take ships offline. They're going to have to do retrofitting. They're going to have to buy more expensive low sulfur fuel. The companies we're owning are going to be able to keep buying high sulfur, cheap fuel and burning that because they have scrubbers installed and are able to clean the output enough to keep burning that high sulfur fuel. So it's a big change in the industry going on right now as we speak.
You mentioned sports betting, which that caught my attention as well. I find that space absolutely fascinating. And as a side note, I think someone should look at launching a sports betting ETF at some point. Perhaps you can do that. But give us some insight here. What do you like about this particular space?
Well, you know, what we really like, it's not necessarily the sports book that's going to drive a whole lot of business. It's all the services around it, as well as the increase in traffic to the casino floor. So it really, sports betting is bringing a new customer segment into the legal U.S. gambling market. So you think a younger clientele who's going to drive more foot traffic to the regional casinos, as well as the software companies that are providing services around sports betting, enabling it, getting it to consumers, helping, you know, companies bring that capability. And then we like some of the sports betting media properties. So there's a few of the media names who are really betting on sports betting, and looking at, you know, really tapping into that space and using their content. So you think like Fox Corp actually is using some of their sports content to directly tap the sports betting market. Like you could almost think you're watching a game and you could place live bets using your remote control while you're watching it.
Ben, as we talk about IMO 2020 and sports betting, I'm just curious, if you do zero in on a policy change that you think will be impactful, how do you then make sure you're reflecting that in the right stocks, right? How do you tilt the odds that these companies will actually benefit the way you think they will from whatever policy changes you believe are on the horizon?
Yeah. What we do is we look at companies that are first and foremost exposed to that policy. So it's pretty straightforward. We look at, you know, IMO 2020, for example, like Scorpio Tankers, STNG, is almost 100% of their revenue exposed to IMO 2020 themes. And so we go through every company that we've, you know, scraped from, you know, SEC filings, from their transcripts, from company reports. And we're looking at, you know, how many times they mention IMO 2020, how many times they mention, you know, high sulfur, low sulfur fuel. And after that, we've come up with a pretty big list of companies that are exposed, and then we go through and do our homework and find out the companies that have the highest exposure to the theme. If they have another business line that is not exposed to that theme, we actually ding them. That's a negative in our scoring process, and it reduces their overall score and potentially kicks them out of the portfolio. At the end of the day, a company has a negative score. It's 50-50 fundamental and policy at the company level. If they have a negative score with those two combined, they don't make it into the portfolio. So it's really only the companies that are truly exposed that have decent fundamentals on our 17-factor fundamental score.
Does the fact that it's an election year make your job more difficult at all? I don't think it's any sort of bold statement to say there's a lot of uncertainty here right now. So how do you factor that into your stock picks?
No, it really doesn't matter, and that surprises people because everyone says, well, it's so dysfunctional in D.C., how can you possibly invest in policy themes? Well, first of all, we've been out for a little over 2 years, and we've done 9.7% alpha in the first 26 months. So it's the outperformance is there. The process works, in my view, and it's going to continue working is our thought. But really, at the end of the day, it's about, again, getting that policy theme right and getting some of those ones that are a little under the radar. You know, I think people aren't paying attention that infrastructure spending is increasing at the state level. Everyone said, well, the federal's not going to get a bill done. So that's a good example. You know, defense spending, we know it's increasing. It's continuing to increase. That's driving the names that we're investing in. Sports betting, it was Supreme Court, right? A lot of these are out of D.C. You know, a lot of our states and federal agencies, they're not directly related to Congress or the White House. And so everything, you know, typically we're investing in has either multiple categories or is really being driven by an agency or a state government initiative right now. And that's going to evolve over time, right? If we get a different administration in 2021, you know, the portfolio is probably going to look different, but not vastly different. I'd say 5G, infrastructure, IMO are probably still going to be there. Sports betting is still going to be there. So a good chunk of the portfolio is going to stay the same.
Ben, you mentioned trying to gain an edge. And I know you're well aware that active management has had a very challenging time over the past, 10 years or so, right? This hasn't really been the most conducive environment for active management. So how do you actually gain an edge? Do you think other managers are overlooking some of these policy changes? Are they unable to identify the right stocks to take advantage? You know, we just walked through your scoring system and the process there. Is that where you gain an edge? What's the case for active management?
Well, I think, and this was, you know, when I was investing at various mutual fund companies and different investors, you know, Lord Abbott or Goldman, you know, we look at policy, but it was always kind of an afterthought or a risk factor. And that was why my partner and I, when we were at Goldman, we were saying, wait a second, this is actually a leading indicator. If you're looking at policy and can position in these policy changes, it can be a leading indicator for changes to industries, to fundamentals. And so policy investing is really about investing in those changing paradigms, which really, I think, you know, funds are our need to rotate. That's why we have to be active. We looked at bringing it passive. It just didn't work. You can't write rules around policy changes. There's too many moving pieces. And so we brought it active. We stick to a very rigid process, but we allow the flexibility to change as you know, the winds change in policy. And at the end of the day, it works. Like it shows up in the numbers. The last point I'll make on that is that policy data is largely unstructured data. So if you look at value investing, you look at all the factors, you know, those are structured data. It's you know, a lot of historical context, but policy is constantly changing. It's very unstructured. Our ability to take that unstructured data and put it into a process is really what gives us our edge.
Well, and obviously U.S. policy impacts 100% of U.S. companies, right?
That's right.
You know, you had a stat on your website that caught my attention. You said, on average, Congress passes 758 bills each year. The Supreme Court rules on 130 cases, and agencies issue 3,853 rules. How in the world do you stay on top of all that?
Yeah, that's per year, right? And we spend a lot of time looking at the agencies, too, so I'm glad you brought that up, because as I mentioned, the agencies, there's over 100 that we follow very closely. The federal agencies drive a lot of the rulemaking. I think people fail to realize when Congress passes a bill, it's really an outline. It's not actually a law yet. And the agencies are the ones tasked with, let's say it's an energy bill, right? It's going to be FERC and the EPA, let's, for example, in a certain bill that determine the actual rules and regulations over the next 2 to 3 years after a bill passes. So it's a very long tail on legislation, and the agencies are really the ones driving the fundamental change. So we have a couple of tools internally where we are scraping the federal agencies, the Federal Register, as well as Congress.gov's Thomas database, and we're taking that data and digesting it and looking for bulks of policy moves and policy change. And that's kind of one of our proprietary processes.
Ben, about 2 minutes left. Where does PLCY fit in a portfolio? Is it best to think of this as a thematic ETF? Do you see this as a core equity holding? Where does it fit?
Well, yeah, we have people using it as a lot of different things. So some people view it as a multi-thematic. They say, listen, I have some 5G, I have some infrastructure, you know, I have some defense, tactical tilts. Actually, you capture everything I want. Let me just buy this. So there are people who use it as this kind of thematic exposure or a satellite to their core. But then the other place, which, you know, we're expecting to see some decent flows actually this month in this specific client, is using it as a mid-cap allocation. I mean, it's 80% roughly mid-caps, so under 10 billion market caps. In the portfolio. So a lot of people are starting to use it as a SMID cap active alternative to usually a mutual fund they're using. This is ETF structure. It's going to have the tax benefits coming forward when the ETF rule goes in place. So it's got everything that it needs, and it's 75 basis points versus a SMID cap active mutual fund is you know, typically over 1%, 1.25%.
Well, Ben, excellent spotlight this week. Appreciate you joining me. I'm sure we'll chat again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Nate.
That was Ben Phillips, Chief Investment Officer at EventShares.